Welcome to the Bowden Blitz SEC edition. I'm Joe Lisi, joined by former National Coach of the Year, Terry Bowden. Coach, great games on tap for week number 10, top 25 battles across the landscape, some of the better games entering this weekend, but we'll take a look at the updated odds entering Saturday, and we see the team to beat, the Alabama Crimson Tide, plus 120 to win an SEC title this year, but Texas A&M, fresh off their road win in Baton Rouge this weekend, has closed the gap. They're 2-1, followed by Georgia, Ole Miss, and Texas. Entering week 10, Coach, we still don't know where the SEC championship is going to go. Could be one of 8 or 10 teams to potentially pull it out.
Well, you know, Ole Miss has maybe the best schedule, SEC schedule, to get there, where they got South Carolina, Florida, Mississippi State, but Alabama's got to play Oklahoma, got to play Auburn, Texas A&M's got to play Texas, which is their big rival, along with Missouri, and then Georgia's got to play Florida, Texas, and Georgia Tech's not in the conference. But anyway, there's too much going on. Anybody can win this thing. I don't think you've got one that I see as a strong favorite, although Alabama's listed number one. There are basically three top teams, and Ole Miss sitting on the outside. But I really like their schedule when it comes to – and the odds are, what, 11-1, 1,100, plus 1,100. And so those are interesting odds. But I think the season has got to be played out. There's losses in there. For every team's got possible losses.
Absolutely. And you see the job that Texas A&M did against LSU and Brian Kelly. We're going to dive into that in the next segment, but Marcel Reed had a dynamic performance. They were 2.5-point road favorites in that ballgame, trailed 15-14, and they just put a beat down on LSU, winning it 42-25, a dominant offense and defensive effort. This team is cooking on both sides of the football, Coach. Mike Elko has done a fantastic job. They're physical. They can run the football defensively. They're opportunistic. Not only for an SEC championship, but big picture, if they're an at-large team, Texas A&M is a team to beat to potentially win a national championship. I mean, they're on fire right now.
Well, I think we've said that the last couple of weeks, Joe, that they, when they have to win defensively, they can win defensively. When they've got to outscore you, they do it that way. Marcel Reed has become a Heisman contender. He can run and throw. Their running game is good. They've got Concepcion, the receiver, punt returner, great skill with special teams as well as on receiving corps. Just an outstanding football team. And again, as we've gone through the season, their stock has gone up just because they've lined up against very good people and found a way to win every week from Notre Dame all the way down.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you look at the Heisman odds as well, as good as Ty Simpson is playing, Marcel Reed is a player to keep an eye out on. 88 rushing yards. He abuses LSU on the ground yet again for the second straight year in a row. Last year, he rushed 9 times for 62 yards and 3 touchdowns. He rushes for multiple touchdowns again, puts up 88 yards on the ground. I mean, just a dynamic dual threat. Right. And what about Diego Pavia? I mean, they get another victory, and Diego Pavia, even though – he didn't put up dynamic numbers. He's the main reason why this offense and this team only have one loss in the regular season. Coach, it could be anybody in the conference that wins the Heisman this year.
You know what? Here's what happened. You got every conference championship game played on December 6th. The Heisman's not picked till the 13th. So you could have a Fernando Mendoza going against Julian Sand, undefeated championship game way up there in the Big Ten. You could have Marcel Reed going against a number of players in the league as an undefeated head coach. But you know what? The two most interesting storylines that everybody likes is Diego Pavia and Trinidad Chambliss. Now, they've got to win some games and be there in the end. But, you know, it's a popularity contest as much as anything else. So don't forget those two names because they have the most interesting stories of how they got to where they are.
Absolutely. And I think we'll take a look at some of the recaps in week number 9. We'll start in Norman, Oklahoma, Coach. When you just look at that performance by Trinidad Chambliss and Lane Kiffin, we talked about it was a rain-soaked day. That potentially could have benefited Oklahoma. Well, Ole Miss started fast. They never looked back. They led this game in the second half and dominated on both sides of the football. They win it by 8 points. I mean, that was a dynamic offensive effort against potentially one of the best defenses in all of the game in Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this one kind of fooled me because I figured Oklahoma, the number one total defense in the country, number one sack team in the country, that they would get to Trinidad Chambliss and they would affect him. But his game was almost exactly like Georgia. He sliced and diced them all the way through. Now, Oklahoma came back and got ahead there in the fourth quarter, 26-25. Then he come back and led them to another score and to the victory. But he has really proven against the best team in the country. He put up like 431 yards of offense that Ole Miss put up against Oklahoma and just beat them. And you know what? John Mateer is not quite ready. He hasn't been totally himself since he got hurt. He's not running very effectively. His passes are not as crisp. But Trinidad Chambliss, he's given them everything and more than they would have expected out of him against at Georgia, at Oklahoma. That's pretty hard to believe.
Absolutely. Again, it was a dynamic effort on both sides of the ball for Ole Miss. They were weak in run support, really contained Oklahoma in the ground game, especially in the second half of that matchup, a key component to why Ole Miss was able to win as a 5.5-point road underdog. A battle that took place in Williams-Brice. We talked about it in the pregame. I thought that Lenora Sellers in South Carolina potentially would be live. Coach, they had a second-half lead and allowed it to slip. They lose the game outright. Coach, this game went right down to the final 25 seconds. Ty Simpson and Kalen DeBoer were on life support in Williams-Brice Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, Jeremy Bernard scored two times in the last 2.5 minutes for Alabama to win this game after being behind, and they were on life support. They were behind, and that's a tough, tough place to play. You know that. That's a very tough, tough place. I don't care who you are to go in there and win a football game. But South Carolina just didn't have enough. They couldn't do enough to go out there. And as well as Lenoris Sellers played, he turned the ball over and fumbled at the end of the game. That led to the touchdown that cost them the victory. And it's kind of been that kind of year for South Carolina. Lenoris Sellers, probably one of the most talented quarterbacks, doesn't quite do enough. South Carolina's offense doesn't score quite enough. And they let one slip away there that really could have been – it could have been a big boost, a shot in the arm for them to win that game.
Absolutely. The last game we're going to recap has residual and domino effects. It was because of the loss in Baton Rouge on Saturday night. We talked about Texas A&M and all of the positives with Marcel Reed. I want to talk about the negatives with LSU. I mean, they played only two quarters of football. You're winning at home, and then all of a sudden you fall off a cliff and lose this ball game 49-25. Coach, it did lead to the firing of Brian Kelly, which we'll dive into in next segment. But this was a pitiful effort at home for the Tigers Saturday night.
Well, they were hanging in there. But now this is a home game. You don't lose at home in front of your people at home. And then the Texas A&M game, but sure, I want to say they had not won since 1992. They had not won in Death Valley. And so it was a huge win for them. But the way they lost, the way they lay down, and you know, there's an old backstory. The strength coach for Texas A&M was Tommy Moffitt. He was the strength coach at LSU for Nick Saban, for Orgeron, for all three of their national championships. And Brian Kelly fired him, which I don't understand that one myself. But they were kind of figuring they were going to find a way to get him. And boy, those fans were calling for him to be gone before that game was over.
Absolutely. I don't know if you heard the press conference with Marcel Reed, but he said that Tommy Moffitt, during the week leading up to LSU, had a tackling dummy with Brian Kelly's face on it, and all of the Aggies were tackling and being prepared. They came out roaring in that matchup. Never look back. When we come back, we'll talk about the situation in LSU. Brian Kelly out. Who potentially could be next roaming the sidelines in Death Valley? Coach and I will talk about it coming up next. Back on the Bowden Blitz, Joe Lisi and Coach Bowden breaking down all things SEC. We left off talking about the matchup last Saturday night in Death Valley. Texas A&M wins 49-25. Right after the game, there was a meeting in LSU. Sunday morning, Brian Kelly is out as head coach. Coach, this is another huge development in the college football world. Penn State really rocked this landscape in college football a few weeks ago. I don't think anybody thought that in the middle of the regular season, Brian Kelly would be out in LSU.
Well, you know what? There's a lesson to be learned here for coaches and for fans and for schools. When you pay somebody $10 million a year or a $100 million contract and give him a guaranteed buyout, he better win a championship. You can't come in second. And if you do, you got nothing to complain about. Brian Kelly in 4 years did not get them to the SEC championship or the national championship. And to be honest with you, he kind of never quite fit into the LSU culture. It's a different culture. I live in Louisiana. It's a different culture. And it was just one of those things he couldn't quite fit in. Then he made some tough decisions. And the biggest thing was you got to go win the big one. You got to win the big one. And he kept talking like it was going to happen the next year and the next year. So, again, he's done a great job as a coach. He's won at four different schools. But when you go to LSU and you get that kind of money and the last three coaches won national championships, you better be in that championship game.
I agree 100%. And I think I could take it a step further. You know, year one was his best resume for LSU. He did it with less talent. The expectation wasn't high. When they had divisions, he won the SEC West, went to the SEC championship game, and lost 50-30 with Jaden Daniels against the top-ranked Georgia Bulldogs. He set an expectation level in year one. They knocked off Alabama at home 32-31, rolling the dice, going for two in Death Valley. And the expectation was this was going to be the norm and we'd build off of that year to get to the college football playoff. It never happened. Now, the bigger question is as well, and I've heard this throughout the LSU fan base, and to a point it's right, you know, it wasn't a proper fit, but neither was Nick Saban, who came from Kent State and was a Midwesterner. We talk about, you know, Skip Bertman and all the others, Dale Brown, that wasn't from the South, potentially one of the greatest college basketball coaches for LSU. So it wasn't just the fact that he wasn't from the South. No. It wasn't embracing the school and the traditions, and he was more of like a CEO as opposed to a hands-on coach, and I think that's where Brian Kelly failed. Coach, there's stories coming out where Brian Kelly saw players in the hallway and just never said hi. You know, his starting center came out from 22-23 and said he never got called into the office to discuss X's and O's or even have a conversation with Brian Kelly, his head coach for 2 years. I mean, I don't understand how that can happen at a major school like LSU, where you're getting $10 million a year to coach up talent and get to the playoff.
Well, you know what? When you're as have coached as long as he has when he got there, he is a Midwesterner. And I've coached in Ohio, which is the Midwest, and I've spent half my life down south. There is a different way to treat players and different way to be coaches. I don't want to say it's colder in the Midwest, but it seems to be much more of a business up in the Midwest. In the South, there's just a little different fatherly approach you take it. And it's not so much that he was from the South, is that even Nick Saban, you have to understand, especially in LSU, when you got the Cajun culture, you've got to know how to relate to people, at least how to talk to them a little bit and understand. And you can't definitely say you guys are spoiled. You fans are spoiled. He made the mistake of saying that before. But regardless, all that stuff you can throw out the window. He did not win the big game. He didn't play too much golf. He didn't go out there and treat players that bad. You got to go win the big game. They would have fired him probably after this game. He lost at home. If he was the nicest guy in the world, they would have shook his hand and said, we're going to get us another coach.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And again, it, you know, what really maybe set this up was, I think, the loss to Vanderbilt. That was a team that you lost, that you defeated 10 straight years, right? And to lose as an underdog in that matchup, on the road and how you lost, allowing Vanderbilt to put up 31 points on supposedly one of the best defenses in the conference and not having adjustments and making adjustments to put your team in a position to win games. Here's the other fact, Coach. You look at his quarterback, Garrett Nussmeier. Last year, he had 8 performances where he threw for over 300 yards. They were 6-2 in those games. The wins in the 6 wins, they won by an average margin of victory of 15.8 points per game. He did not have one game this year, Coach, where they threw for over 300 yards. You can't win a championship that way.
No, and they didn't run the ball. You know, this is the second year in a row they haven't run the ball very well. And when you don't run the ball, you don't get those big numbers in the passing game. I'm sorry. It's not like we're either going to be a running team or we're going to be a passing team. You can't have a great passing team that picks up big yardage, the deep ball, the explosive plays, unless you've got an affecting running game. And they, again, were not able to run in that game against Texas A&M effectively to help Nussmeier out. So, again, another one of the problems that he had is that you know, maybe the fact that he lost the quarterback to Michigan that he thought he had might have been the answer there, but regardless, did not get it done. And when you had the same problems offensively this year as I had last year, you got to remember that last championship they had, man, they could score a lot of points. Maybe that's why Joe Burrow's is kind of big on the list for the coaches that are trying to be hired there.
Absolutely. I think the biggest question now is
Joe Brady.
Where do they turn, Coach? Do they go to a coordinator like Joe Brady, who's with the Buffalo Bills? Is it all in with Dan Lanning or potentially Lane Kiffin, or is it more of a Group of Five coach, John Summerall, where you're not going to spend another buyout for $53 million?
Well, let me say that Lane Kiffin's probably going to be everybody's first choice right now. He is just a hot ticket, and he knows the SEC. He's at Ole Miss, and they may dislike Alabama a lot. And they misliked, but they don't like Ole Miss either, but they like the fact that he won there. But after that, now you're talking if they could get Brady back because of the conference he had, or maybe even Summerall. Summerall is right up the road, 30 minutes away. John Summerall at Tulane, that's kind of an in-between G6 team. You know, it's really up there. So I think they'll go out. I think Lane Kiffin if it's first, but I think they'll try to get someone with a little bit of Southern SEC background or South background.
We'll see how it plays out in Death Valley when Coach and I return. A couple of previews for Week 10 coming right back. On the Bowden Blitz, Joe Lisi and Coach Bowden breaking down week number 10 in the conference. Coach, we'll start out in the battle in Knoxville. Very good matchup. Two lost teams, Oklahoma and Tennessee, fighting for their college football playoff lives. We'll see that Tennessee opened as a 4.5-point home favorite in Rocky Top. It's now down to 3.5 and threes across multiple books. John Mateer and this team have been a little bit inconsistent. To your point, he doesn't look 100% coming back from the thumb surgery, but I still think Oklahoma could pose a problem for that defense in Tennessee offensively, and I think the defense could make some turnovers against Joey Aguilar. I'm calling for the upset. I like Oklahoma on the road.
I'm not ready to go that far yet. I think I'm going to take the over. I think Oklahoma giving up what they did to Chambliss, I thought they would be better against the pass. Tennessee's passing attack reminds me of Ole Miss's, or maybe a little bit more of a deep ball, the type of passing attack and offense that they have. And then Tennessee gives up a ton of points. They give up 30.9 points a game on defense as well. And so if John Mateer is healthy, which I think he will be, I think Oklahoma's got a chance to win this game. I'm just not ready to take them over the was it -2.5 or -3 points that they see right now. But I think it's going to be a great game. I'm seeing an over in this game. I'm seeing an over. And I want to say Tennessee has been over this amount every game this year, has been over the 56.5 in every game they played this year.
If we're looking at Oklahoma or Tennessee with two losses, and let's say it came down between one of those teams and Notre Dame. Would you give the edge to the SEC team in that situation, or would you still think that Notre Dame potentially, because of the brand recognition, has the inside edge to make a college football playoff?
Well, you know what? I just have this feeling that a team like Notre Dame, the name Notre Dame, they'll do everything they can to get them. Like right now, everything I'm reading says if they win out and they've got a good chance to win out, they're going to be in the 12-team playoff. And there are going to be a lot of SEC schools that knock each other out with two or three losses even. And so that will be interesting. If there's a two-loss team in the SEC and there's Notre Dame, I still have to think they're going to go after Notre Dame, just because historically that's what they usually do. They want a game like team like Notre Dame in the playoffs. And Notre Dame is a pretty good football team. They just haven't played anybody after losing their first two games. They haven't really beat Southern Cal. But Southern Cal has been a hot and cold team too. So I whether it's right, I don't know that it's right, but I think a two-loss Notre Dame will be in the playoffs.
We'll see exactly how that plays out. There's a 12 o'clock battle taking place in Austin. Texas has been winning games, Coach, but as ugly as anybody in the country, back-to-back wins against Kentucky and Mississippi State in overtime. This team has been living on life support in back-to-back weeks. Is this the week they potentially get right against Clark Lee and Vanderbilt? They're only laying 1.5 points at home in Austin.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going with Diego Pavia. I just am going to go with him. You know, I have just the opposite effect. Being a guy who's coached in the SEC and have been a college football all my life, I have a hard time not thinking they're going to push Notre Dame way up. And I have a hard time being an old SEC guy if trusting how good Vanderbilt is. But I think Pavia, the guy that he is there, I think of him being like Haynes King, put the ball in his hands in the last series, the last quarter, and he'll find a way to win for you. I just think Texas, and I think Arch Manning may not be able to go. I know he's kind of iffy. He had a concussion or a concussion protocol from last week. And so I just see Vandy pulling this thing off. Texas has been inconsistent. And with Arch Manning maybe out, I just don't know where it's going to go. I'm gonna have to stay with Vandy on this one and say, you know what, heck with my background in the SEC, Vandy is for real.
When you look at the matchup against Mississippi State, Texas was a 7.5-point road favorite. They trailed in the second half of that ball game, 38-21. They needed a 70-yard punt return to tie that game up. At 38, they were given the golden ticket, and they definitely cashed in overtime, winning the game by 8 points, a dominant effort by the Longhorns to just pull that ball game out, Coach. So we'll see exactly how it plays out the rest of the way. And I agree with you. I think, you know, right now, early on, Vanderbilt catching points. They have the more consistent quarterback, more consistent defense right now. Mm-hmm. Texas is going to have to get it together. You can't allow teams to sneak in like Kentucky and like Mississippi State right now that don't have one win in the conference.
No, Vandy won't blow it at the end. Vandy will put that ball in that quarterback's hand. If Vandy has the ball and they're winning, they will hold on to the football. If they're behind 3 points or 5 points, that son of a gun's going to drive them down for a touchdown. I just think that's what he's got.
Coach and I will be back later in the week breaking down all the big games in the SEC. For Coach Bowden, I'm Joe Lisi. Have a great day, everyone. We'll see you later in the week.